Bobbin rate tape, box one, side one, track one, episode four.
And that's the news over WOR New York. I'm Lyle Vann. Time for some fun now as WOR wheels out its big afternoon show, Radio New York. Bob and Ray are at the handlebars. Is that a tandem bike they're riding? I'll see you later at 6.
You know, that's something that we always wanted, Lyle, a tandem bike.
Nobody ever gave us one.
No, and we didn't feel that we should spend the money for one.
Do you know what they have now?
What?
They have tricycles for adults. Have you seen those?
No. Oh, the ones they had down in Florida with the
yeah,
old folks?
Yeah,
yeah. With the basket on the,
yeah,
the back? Those are good, too.
Yeah, with gears, those could be real fun.
But a tandem always appealed to me, and they have such gear ratios now that it's really simple to ride a bicycle.
Right.
You can go up a hill now just with no effort at all. Well, anyway, to get serious, this is Bob and Ray, and we have rung out in the line, an old record theme of ours that probably you've heard before, but we haven't heard for years and years.
I might bring back a few memories to a few of you, and if you like it, why don't you let us know?
Well, as Bob likes to put it, see if you can remember where you were and what you were doing when you first heard this.
Take it.
Leon.
Elliot,
huh?
Why, I'd have known you anyplace. You certainly haven't changed.
Haven't changed from what to what, man?
Oh, Bobby, you always were a tease. You surely must remember me.
I surely must, but to play it safe, I gotta say I don't. I saw you there in the audience.
I'll give you a hint. Fourth grade.
That's a tough one. When you say fourth grade, all I can think of is Flunk. I don't suppose your name happens to be Flunk.
Oh, mercy, no. I'm Miss Rimrocker. I was your teacher when you were in the fourth grade.
Is that right? I got to admit, I still don't remember you, but it certainly was nice of you to drop by and say hello. And
well, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And when the folks back in Watford City heard I was coming to New York, they all told me to be sure and look you up.
Where was that you said you got your...
Watford City.
What?
Watford City, North Dakota. For heaven's sake, Bobby, I know you always had a mind like a sieve, but you can't have forgotten the place where you spent the happiest years of your life.
Well, I've always figured I must have spent some happy years somewhere, but I didn't dream I'd done it in a town I never heard of.
Well, I remember you in the fourth grade like it was just yesterday.
Well, couldn't have been yesterday, because I remember yesterday I got a haircut, and then I stopped off...
For heaven's sake, I don't mean you were really in the fourth grade yesterday. It's just a figure of speech.
It's kind of hard to figure out where figures of speech leave off and hallucinations begin.
Well, but... I'll still tell my little people that if they study hard, they can be rich and famous someday like Bobby Elliott.
And what do your little people say when you tell them that, Miss Rimrocker?
Nothing. They never heard of you.
Well, that makes us even. Because I tell you, I never heard of them, or you, or Watford City.
Watford City, not Watford City. Which reminds me that your Uncle Luther thinks you could send him a little check, or a bottle, or something, now that you're in the big time.
Look, there's nobody on either side of my family named Uncle Luther. You've got me confused with somebody else.
Well,
I don't mind, but...
I've read about people who got famous and then denied they came from humble beginnings, but I never thought I'd see it with my own two eyes.
Well, you can come from humble beginnings without doing it in Watford City. Take Abraham Lincoln.
You take Abraham Lincoln. I'm taking the 927 to Bismarck so I can make my bus connection for home.
Okay.
I'm thoroughly disappointed.
Well, on with the show, and if you folks are listening in Watford City, you haven't lost a son. You've regained Miss Rimrocker.
Admission is only $2 per family. Now, don't you miss it.
Good afternoon, Bob and Ray.
Oh, hello, Akbar, my tie.
I bring felicitations from all of the folks at the TAP, from all of your staff, most of which is over there.
Right.
And from all of the people who work with you on the show here.
Very good.
Has Chester Hasbrook Frisbee arrived yet?
No, we haven't seen him. Is he still wearing that big coat, too? I mean, in all this hot weather?
He didn't. Yes, he wore that overcoat on Monday and Tuesday.
What does he have? Just bathing trunks underneath that, or what?
I don't know, but yeah, I guess it's just a habit he has of wearing a...
Well, why would he do that? I mean, I can understand maybe a coat, but the scarf, that's ridiculous.
Or maybe it's kind of like a trademark with him.
It is. Oh, people say, there goes that nut. Sure.
Well, if he comes in, will you tell him I'm across the street, please?
Did you have any message we could relay to
him?
Yes,
I'm trying to get him to write Carmine into the backstage show.
Oh, Carmine, you're a friend of Carmine's, too?
Yes, I met Carmine through Kent Lyle Burnley.
Oh, I see. All
and,
right.
He's trying so much to become an actor, and I thought maybe I could put in a good word for him.
I know he's been going to acting school evenings.
Has he?
Carmine, it'd be nice to see him get a part on the backstages.
Well, give me a ring over there if Chester shows
Look,
up.
Look, just write the number down here on the piece of paper. Right. I don't want to give it over the air.
No, I'll write it down.
Okay.
And now, the Whippet Motor Car Company, observing the 45th anniversary of its disappearance, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who finds unhappiness by carrying out a relentless search for it. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is dozing on the divan in the den. It's late afternoon, and Mr. Blockhoist, the Village Water and Power Commissioner, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Village Water and Power Commissioner Blockhoist. It was neighborly of you to come right over as soon as you got my terror-stricken phone call. I hope you remembered to shut off all the water and power in town before you left the office.
Well, it really isn't necessary for me to do that, Miss Passenger. In fact, even when I lock up for the night, I always leave the village water and power turned on.
My stars, you must have nerves of steel. I get terribly upset myself when I'm away from home and remember that I've left the steam iron turned on and that it's sitting next to the open can of cleaning fluid.
Well, of course, that kind of thing could result in blowing up the house. Personally, I believe I'd feel more upset if I deprived the whole village of water and power every time I closed the office.
Well, I suppose you're more familiar with your own type of neurosis than I am. Frankly, I can't stand to hear one faucet dripping in the middle of the night, let alone a whole town full of them.
Well, Miss Bessinger, just because I'm the water and power commissioner, that doesn't mean I can hear every faucet in town that may be dripping.
Well, that may be true, but a leaky faucet runs up the water bill, whether you can hear it or not. And just worrying about that is enough to keep a person awake.
Well, ma'am, it doesn't run up my water bill when other people's faucets drip, so naturally I don't lie awake worrying about it.
My star, I don't believe I've ever heard such a cold-blooded comment from a man who's supposed to be a public servant. As I recall, Andrew Johnson was nearly impeached on grounds that were a good deal less incriminating.
Well, in his case, I don't think the evidence was quite as garbled. But did you call me all the way over here just so we could discuss plans for my impeachment, Miss Bessinger?
Well, no, I didn't, Village Water and Power Commissioner Blockhoist. I really wanted to discuss that storm drain in front of the house that seems to be completely blocked. You can see how the water's already back clear up the driveway. And I may have to sleep on the roof tonight if the flood level keeps rising.
Well, I don't understand how you could be having a flood problem at all when everybody else in the village is complaining about the drought. You sure you aren't just looking at the driveway through that goldfish bowl on the windowsill?
Land of Goshen, I do believe that's what's happened, Village Water and Power Commissioner Blockhoist. And it creates the optical illusion that the water in the bowl is surging up towards the house.
Yes.
I wondered why there was fish food sprinkled all over the top instead of the usual flood debris. Well, you can't imagine what a relief it is to be left high and dry again. Why, I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Can it be that Edna's miraculous escape from the surging floodwaters will at last enable her to live a fuller and happier life? Or will her realization that some mysterious stranger must have removed the floating debris she usually keeps in the fishbowl only lead to further heartbreak? Join us for the next exciting episode when Edna may be declared a disaster area in the gathering dusk.
You're listening to a tape from the Bob and Ray for the Truly Desperate collection hosted on the Internet Archive.
Is it on? I want to get to know some of these nice people who are seated here today. They came in a little bit early. Maybe I'd ask this question. Who's here from the greatest distance? Who's from the farthest away? Anyway, let's start off with, well, with you, sir. Where are you from?
Oh, I feel silly. I'm not that far away.
Don't feel silly.
Yonkers.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yonkers. No, I mean...
See, I know you don't laugh at me.
I'm not laughing at you. No, I mean somebody like, from Reykjavik, Iceland. Something like that. Anybody here from Reykjavik?
I've been there once. I was up to Reykjavik with Bobby Fischer, who was beating the Russian at the...
Oh, really? Yeah, really?
Did I hear about that?
Sure.
Well, I was up in Reykjavik one time when Bobby Fischer was beating the Russian at chess.
Okay.
Want to hear about it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was there in Reykjavik, see?
When the chess match was on.
Yeah, Bobby Fischer, he was beating this here Russian, you know, in chess.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to watch it there. They had it on closed-circuit television.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
And Bobby Fischer, he was, you know, very temperamental.
I know he was.
I mean, no, if a speck of dust was on a table, he'd walk out in a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And I had fish that night.
Is that the whole story? Is that what you said, do I want to hear about? And that's what you plan to tell me?
Oh, you want to hear the rest of the story?
Yeah.
Okay, so they didn't bone the fish, see?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I like a fish fillet, but I don't like the worry of looking for bones.
Right.
You can understand how a guy feels.
Sure.
So, I was poking around here, kind of playing with my food, and the waiter said, were you up here to watch Bobby Fischer beat the Russian at chess, he said to me?
Did he say it in English or Reykjavik?
They speak Danish.
Danish, huh?
He said to me kind of English, so I understood what he was talking about.
You knew?
I'm here to watch Bobby Fischer beat this here Russian, I said, in chess.
Was Bobby beating him at that point?
Yeah, he was.
He was, okay.
And for dessert, we had these little tarts.
Probably Danish pastry at some point.
Could be. Danish pastry, you're right. I forget offhand right now. At that point in time, see, it was last summer.
Right. Is that the whole story?
That's about all I can remember.
Okay, that was very interesting. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So, you anything? Pop-up toaster or electric cufflinks?
No, we give you this this andiron set, if you'd like it.
Oh, okay.
I'm also working on John Forsythe.
Let me hear a little bit of it.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Henry.
Back again here with Radio New York with Bob and Ray. We'll have the backstages in a few minutes. And isn't it a beautiful day here in the big city?
Oh, it's lovely, lovely. The air is certainly acceptable, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, boy, is it ever. And tomorrow's going to be acceptable also. It's 82 degrees here in New York now. The humidity, 32%. THI, 73.
Chester Hasbrook Frisbee is here for just a second. He is the writer, as you know, and the producer of Mary Backstage, our soap opera that will be along in a few minutes. Chester, did Akbar Maitai catch up with you?
Yes, he did, Bob. You know,
he wanted to get a part for Carmine in...
That was the reason that he was looking for me. He had made a suggestion that I include or somehow write in Carmine into the script.
Yes.
For the backstage.
Ray and I were discussing how you possibly could work Carmine in any way that would be believable, you know.
Well, Akbar and Kent Lyle were telling me that he's been going to drama school in the evening.
I understand that's so.
But I also told him that this wasn't a school that I was running here. I wanted professional actors
of course
to be appearing.
And at this point in time, it's a little late to try and get Carmine into the story, isn't it?
Well, in this point of time it is, but I went back to my room, and I sat down. I threaded up the old typewriter, and you'll be surprised to hear in about 3 minutes, you're very Carmine in a very dramatic role in the backstages.
You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen, at the Bob and Ray Show. Chester Frisbee has written Carmine into today's episode, so be sure you stay tuned, boys and girls. Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. Aboard Captain Wolf Larson's vessel, the Deep Sea Doodle, Mary, Harry, Pop, and Calvin and the rest of the passengers are enjoying their trip towards Salem Willows on their way to New York. It's been a pleasant evening and... On board the ship, we hear.
And they said, well, where does that 3,000-pound gorilla sleep?
And, what was the answer?
Any place he wants to.
That's pretty good, Captain.
Isn't that a good one, my lad?
Yes,
here, let me fill up your glass with the good captain's port.
I'll pour it for you, Captain.
Oh, thank you, mate.
There you are, Mrs. Backstage. Mr. Backstage.
Oh, thank you. That's enough for me.
And Mr. Hoogerman.
Oh, thank you. That's enough for me. I think I can drive a school bus.
When do you estimate we'll be hitting the willows, Captain?
Well, I thought we might have a little bet on that.
Sounded like a cannon shot.
Well, I've been going to sea for nigh on the 60 years. It sounded like somebody pulled a shot across our bow.
That's the alarm, Captain.
Them fighting tactics. Let me go up on deck and see what this is all about.
Yes, we'll go with you. We'd better all get up on deck.
Yeah, let's put our port down.
Okay. You follow us back there for a couple of hours, too.
Let's see. Who's out there?
They fired again.
They are firing across the bow.
That's warlike action. Who's shooting across me bow?
I hoid there.
Who? Who's that?
I hoid there.
Somebody on the other vessel.
Are you? Who are you? Who are you? This
are
is...
Are you friends or foes?
I think I'm a foe of you. What be you shooting across me bow for?
Who are you anyway?
I am Carmine Sayer. What's doing there?
What are you going to do, Captain?
Well, I tell you, if you'd hand me my spyglass and let me zero in on this Carmine, I'm going to blow him right out of the ocean. Right out of the ocean.
Well, are we facing a war at sea between the vessels commandeered by Carmine and Captain Wolf Larson? Be sure and join us tomorrow for the next exciting episode when we'll hear... That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, Word Carr speaking.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it.
I like the neat way you worked Carmine into it.
I'm afraid we'll have to blow him right out of the sea.
Ahoy there!
He doesn't seem to realize the episode is over. Good work, Carmine.
Oi.
Say, I heard Carmine doing a bang-up job on that episode of Barry Backstage.
Well, he's been going to drama school's evenings, you know, and...
Well, it certainly shows.
It did. And the author of the Backstage has wrote him in today.
I know he did.
I don't think he can... You know, keep this up very much, or very long, I should say. You're going to write him out tomorrow, I'm afraid.
Probably, but it was a good opportunity for him, and I'm sure he'll get more offers for more work.
Yeah.
I'm off to Canada, you know, for this weekend for the meeting of the Canadian mayors.
Well, listen, let me ask you, how can you going to a meeting up in Canada help advance your candidacy for the mayor of New York?
Well,
follow that.
I look at it in terms of education, Ray. I think the problems they have up there might very well be some of the same problems we face here. And I think by hearing some of their solutions...
Where is it being held, you know?
Prince Edward Island.
Oh, Prince Edward Island. I thought maybe in Quebec, where they speak, provincial French there, and...
Well, that would
speak
probably,
French,
yes, we. Now, another thing that I wanted to mention... was that Prince Edward Island is celebrating its 100th birthday this year.
That's right, as a province.
Yes.
Prince Edward Island has been there more than 100 years.
Oh, of course, it's been there since man can remember.
Well, since the famous glacier went by.
Right, left it there.
Right.
And I think the Queen's coming over for it. It's going to be a big celebration. Well, I got to go. I'll see you.
Did you rent your tux for the wedding of Princess Anne?
Not yet.
Oh.
I will. Okay, I'm going to... Let me just take a call here. Take the first one on line one here and see if we have anybody interesting. All we ask is that you give us your name so we know who is on the other end, and we can find you if we need to. Can I have your name, please?
Yes. I'm Sally Rand Pinkstaff.
Uh-huh. Is that kind of an unusual name for a man, Sally Rand
Pinkstaff? I guess so. But my father had just gotten home from the Chicago World's Fair when I was born, and he couldn't seem to think of anything else.
I see. I guess a lot of men had one-track minds for a while after they'd been to that
fair. Yeah, that's what I guess.
I hope your personality hasn't been warped by the name you wound up with.
Well, it feels warped.
It does.
But I thought it was just because of all the humid weather we've been having.
Well, in any case, should make the opinion you called in to give be a real dilly. Could we have it right now?
Okay, it's my opinion that all the junk they put out for bald-headed men is useless. And that when the manufacturers claim it'll grow hair in a billion ball, they're deliberately lying.
I kind of side with you on that, sir. But
yeah.
You sound really riled up. I guess you're bald like myself, and you've suffered a lot of disappointment. Huh?
Well, I've suffered a lot of disappointment, but not because I'm bald. You see, I invented a new game that you have to play with hairy billiard balls. And now I'm stuck because none of the ointments work.
Well, I imagine your frustration will break out into violence any day now. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out. Thanks for calling, anyway. It was very interesting.
Good to meet one, huh?
Yeah, Your name, please.
Hello? Yeah, am I on the air now?
Yeah, this is Bob Ray. You're on the air live.
Oh.
I'd like to have your name.
Do you have any seven-second delay or anything?
None whatsoever,
no. Oh, boy. Well, look, my name is Feeble Sagwell, and I live on the monorail at the old 1964 World's Fair.
Okay, what's your opinion, Feeble?
Well, I think we should all get up a petition asking Lawrence Welk to hire Jean-Jacques Gabor for his orchestra.
Why?
Well, you see, they both have kind of heavy accents that make it hard for the rest of us to catch what they're saying.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought that if they got together, they might understand each other and tell us what they're saying.
Well, I don't know whether Lawrence...
Translate for each other. Like.
Lawrence and Zsa could understand each other in any language.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit difficult.
Pretty good about the match winning, huh?
It is, yep. Thanks for your call and your opinion. Always glad to hear from folks who are really thinking straight.
Yeah.
Presented yesterday on this program about this time, too, I guess, or maybe a little earlier. And our scouts have rounded up another person who falls into the same category, and I have his information card here. First of all, I'd like to ask you your name, sir, if you care.
Well, yes, sir. I'm Gene Fansel. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
Gene Fansel. And before the show, I know you were kind of breaking up a little bit, Gene, and I want you to know we're all your friends, and that...
Yeah.
Whereabouts in Oklahoma was it?
Ada.
Ada, Oklahoma. Now, would you tell us your sad story, and we'll try to be of sympathetic nature to you?
I have to get to Woonsocket, Rhode Island, where the world specialist for hammer toes is located.
And I understand you were on your way to Woonsocket when you arrived here in New York, and a rather unpleasant experience took place.
Well, I had my money in a pillowcase, and I went into a bar. And I emptied it like this, out onto the bar.
Why did you do that, Gene Fansel?
So I could pay the bartender. And I never saw so many people turn and look at my money. So funny-like.
Well, that's kind of an unusual thing to see, a man with a pillowcase full of money dropping it out on the bar like that.
Well, one of them come up and tapped me on the shoulder and said I was wanted on the telephone.
Uh-huh. So you went into the phone booth?
Yes, sir.
And what happened then, Gene Fansel?
Well...
Nobody was on the phone, as I understand it. And now, try to control yourself. You went to the phone, there was no one there.
I came back. Hello.
We were in there maybe for 30, 45 seconds.
Say, hello.
Then you returned to the bar, as I understand your story. And what did you see there, Gene Fansel?
Just a short beer.
Well, he's broken up, ladies and gentlemen, and rightly so. And we want to make him feel a little bit better by giving him this Bob and Ray three-slot pop-up toaster. I hope that... I know that doesn't get you to Woonsocket.
That's a lot of good that'll do me.
It isn't going to help your hammer toe. But anyway, thank you, and it's certainly been good to hear your story. Now, let's go. Let's go to you, Ron, and whatever you can read from your list. Maybe from Miller?
When the sun sets...
back and we'll have our story.
Yeah, I was listening. I was down in the experimental kitchen and I was just taken with that. What was that gentleman's name, Mr. Fansel?
Gene Fansel,
yes. Yes, it's a terrible, sad story.
Well,
he has to get to Woonsocket with his hammer toe, does he?
Yes. Well, let's not go into that.
All right.
Again, he's over there and he feels pretty miserable.
I'm going to go over and talk to him. I brought him some brownies from the Bob and Ray, Experimental Kitchen.
Well,
here
at W.O.R. today, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yes. Good day to cook.
Mr. Fancil, maybe this will help.
Harry's taking some brownies to Mr. Fancil.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
And here's a little cool music.
What did carry money in the pillowcase for?
See, now she's starting it all up with him again.
I just should have done that.
Now he's breaking down again.
I went to the telephone. Well, that was not smart to do either. He shouldn't have gone to the telephone.
I mean, it was pretty obvious.
Mr.
Fancil, it was pretty obvious when you had your money all out there on the bar.
Yes.
For somebody to say there's a phone call for you, a perfect stranger.
I know.
You should have known better.
Well, I mean, as they say, everybody has 20-20 hindsight, you know, but I knew at the time.
Sure. Mm. You wouldn't do it again.
No.
No. Haven't tried this lately because of such humidity, but see what's happening in the street outside.
Here's the Broadway studio. Big city down there, tied to the rear right below us. Well,
enough of that.
Seems like a little action going down there.
The robin. The brown thrasher. Eastern bluebird.
I think that's all the time we have, Bird.
We cut a microphone. I'm awfully sorry, ma'am, but that's all the time we have. But you stay by, and we'll put you on a little later here at the Bob and Ray Show.
This is a very interesting bird. And I was talking to the bird lady about that.
This is one of our audience members who enjoys bird calls.
During the news, we were over in the far corner and
exchange bird calls.
She gave us some very interesting bird calls. And, you know, I was never interested in that. I could walk through a park and hear the birds, but not be aware of it or make it make any impression on me at all.
Well, of course, you have to have some study.
I think after listening to this lady, I'm going to appreciate the birds more and see if I can identify them.
I know I appreciate the brown thrasher much more than I used to. The only sound made by the ruby-throated hummingbird is a high-pitched tweet, which is unable to be heard by the human ear. You know, our usher has been conducting a little polling of the audience for us to find out. We thought it might be interesting to find out the person who has the most exciting experience to tell, and it is Mr. Otto Sliff, who is here with me now.
Slurf?
Yes, sir. You have rather bad handwriting, Otto.
That's a lost art, I think, a good handwriting.
Well, look,
I remember in school going around and around, around, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You've been listening to a tape hosted on the Internet Archives, a free website. If you purchase these files, please return them and ask for a refund. They're freely available at archive.org and were originally recorded, digitized, and uploaded by the Toasters at the House of Toast.